Luke chapter 12, beginning with verse 2. But there is nothing covered up that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in the inner rooms shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. And I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. But I will warn you whom to fear. Fear the one who, after he is killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. Fear of God. When is the last time you thought of the fear of God? Or have you ever thought of the fear of God? What does that mean? We know that the Bible teaches us that perfect love casts out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. And those that have come and are willing to love God with all their heart, have repented and turned from their selfishness of their heart towards loving God, and under those conditions, God promises to forgive them. And they need fear punishment no longer. So where the love is perfected in the heart and is full in the heart, there is no need and reason to fear punishment any longer. For God promises, and we have the oath of God, that punishment that we deserve will not be given to us. People in our experience in our day, there's a great deal of fear in people's experiences. Fear of flying, a minor fear, but real fear people have. The word phobia is connected to the idea of fear. People are afraid of the number 13, so they build buildings without a 13th floor, at least on the elevator markings. People are afraid of spiders. People are afraid of being sick. People are afraid of what people will think of them. The Bible says the fear of man is a snare. People live under the influence of that fear within their heart that people will reject them if they act a certain way or say what is true or be themselves. They act upon the fear of what other men and women will think of them. It's called the fear of man. It's a real fear, and people act upon it, and it affects their life. It determines how their life goes. And thus, when people live under fear, and millions of people take prescription medicine to alleviate fear, dread, and calm it down until it goes away in their consciousness, blocks it out. People are so conscious of fear that there's a belief that fear of any kind is wrong. That fear of any kind is what would not be in a relationship with God. But that is an erroneous thought based upon our experience of fear. Fear is not a good thing that we would ever seek out. And so we would conclude that any good thing that comes from God would not include fear. But the Bible talks a lot about the fear of God, the fear of the Lord. And it's a topic that I have never heard anyone preach on except one time. The fear of the Lord. That was many years ago. And I cannot remember anything about that sermon except one statement. And that preacher said that, he said this, a lot of commentators treat fear as nothing but reverence or respect. And they were to reverence or respect God. He says, I know it includes that. I still think it means we're to fear Him. Abraham was given a child miraculously in his old age, a child of promise. And when he received this promise at the hand of God, delighted that God would honor him with a child and an heir, when the child was 15 years old, God came back and visited Abraham and said, Abraham, take your child, your only child, Go to a mountain I will show you, and offer him up as a sacrifice unto me. And Abraham got everything ready in the last morning. The next morning, early, he got up with his servants and the mules, and they packed up everything, traveled off to the mountain that God told him to go to. He told his servants to stay at the foot of the mountain, and he went up the mountain with his son, with the wood, with the fire. He took stones and prepared an altar upon which to offer up his son as a blood sacrifice to God, at God's command. And as he did so, and following the obedience of God, he raised up his hand with a knife in it, ready to offer up his son as a sacrifice. And God said, Abraham, stop, stop. God spoke to Abraham and said, now I know that you fear me, and that you would give up your son, your only son, to me. You would obey me. God said, now I know that you fear me. What does that mean? Now I know that you fear me. When his descendants became a large nation in slavery in Egypt, and Moses was raised up and led them out of this slavery, the very descendants through Isaac, that one son, they were over 2 million strong, and he led them out of Egypt and through a wilderness, and they came to a mountain called Mount Sinai. And this large group of the descendants of Abraham were gathered there. The book of Exodus records what happened there. I need to read that to you. Read portions. The Lord said to Moses, behold, I shall come to you in a thick cloud, in order that the people may hear when I speak with you, may also believe in you forever. And Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. So it came about on the third day, when it was morning, that there were thunder and lightning flashes and a thick cloud upon the mountain, and a very loud trumpet sound, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. Wouldn't you? We were out in the wilderness, living in tents, dependent upon God to give us the bread and water for the day. And here we are at this mountain. And descending upon this mountain are dark clouds, and it begins to thunder, as God promised through Moses. There were thunder and lightning flashes and a thick cloud upon the mountain and a very loud trumpet sound. Can you imagine? Very loud trumpet sound. 2 million people could hear. Loud. It was God's sound. It was God's lightning and thunder and clouds. It was God making known His presence by things that they could hear and see. And as a result, all the people were in the camp and they trembled. And then it goes on to say that God Himself spoke out from the mountain. He actually spoke words that all the people could hear. And He said such things as, you shall have no other gods before me. He says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. He says that I am a God who shows loving kindness to thousands and to those who love me and keep my commandments. He says to honor your father and mother. He says, you shall not commit murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house or any of his goods. God spoke by His own voice directly to the people. 2 million people hearing the voice of God from the mountaintop. All the people perceived the thunder and the lightning flashes and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood at a distance. Then they said to Moses, speak to us yourself, and we will listen, but let not God speak to us, lest we die. Listen to what Moses explains as the reason why God is doing what he's doing. Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, for God has come in order to test you, and in order that the fear of him may remain with you, so that you may not sin." Do not be afraid of the thunder and the lightning and the trumpet sound, but do be afraid of God. He has come in order to test you, and in order that the fear of him may remain with you, so that you may not sin. We know that the scriptures tell us about faith, that we are to exercise faith, that we are to trust. But we are told that we are not to trust in man and the arm of flesh for the provision that God promises. We are not to trust in riches to provide us the essentials of life, the necessities of our soul. We're told not to trust in our works of law and our own works of righteousness to have a relationship with God. But we are to trust in the mercy of God and in the grace of God as promised through Jesus Christ. So faith in and of itself is not a virtue unless the object of faith is the object that God would have us to trust in. So we are called upon to exercise trust and faith, not in things and not in people and not in riches and not in treasures and things that you do to seek your own, but we are to trust in God and in His Son Jesus Christ. So faith in and of itself is not virtuous, and in and of itself is not the thing to have, but what you trust in is to be a particular object, and other things we are not to trust in. And so fear. We are not to fear man. We are not to fear those that can destroy our body, Jesus taught us as we read our text in Luke 12. Don't destroy him that can destroy your body. Don't fear him that can destroy your body. We are not to fear the ones that can destroy our bodies. We are not to fear man. We are not to fear death. But we are to fear God. And just as faith has its proper object that we are to have faith in, and other objects we are not to have faith in, so fear has its objects that we are not to fear, but we are to fear God. We are to fear God. Throughout the scriptures, "Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God." The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance in the evil way. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord and great treasure and turmoil with the treasure. By loving kindness and truth, iniquity is atoned for, and by the fear of the Lord, one keeps away from evil. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but live in the fear of the Lord always. In the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. Fearing God. Romans chapter 3. I want you to know that it is my sense that this topic is so bountiful and so much to know about it that I do not have any reason to believe that we shall finish it. It's not a topic that can be finished in one sermon. In Romans chapter 3, beginning with verse 9, Paul says, "What then? Are we better than they? Not at all. For we have already charged that both Jews and Greeks are all under sin." Jews were that nation of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, and Greeks were everyone else. Two categories of people in the writings of Paul. Therefore, he is charging that all are under sin. And then he quotes from the Old Testament various quotes to express and repeat God's description that all are under sin. Verse 10 says, "There is none righteous, not even one." Verse 11, "There is none who understands, there is none who seeks for God. All have turned aside, together they have become useless. There is none who does good, there is not even one. Their throat is an open grave. With their tongues they keep deceiving. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. What a picture. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their paths. And the path of peace have they not known. And then he quotes from Psalm 36. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Before their eyes, in their minds, in their consciousness, as they go about their life and as they go about what they think about and what they're conscious of and what they give themselves to get involved in, there's no fear of God before their eyes. That is one of the indications and attributes of one who is under sin. There's no fear of God before their eyes. They live as though God isn't there. They have no fear in their heart that they shall ever have to give an account to Almighty God for all that they do and how they live. There's no fear of God before their eyes. That is why Jesus in Luke chapter 12, our text, says to fear Him. I warn you whom to fear, verse 5. Fear the one who after he has killed has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. Why? Verse 2. There is nothing covered up that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Accordingly, what you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light. What you have whispered in the inner rooms shall be proclaimed upon the housetop. Fear him who knows what is not yet revealed and is covered and is hidden. Fear God who is everywhere that he has created anything and knows the intent of the heart when nobody else does. Fear him when you cover up your sin and pretend that you don't have any and never have had any. Because he who to whom you will answer to knows of your sin through and through. And there will be a time in which, in the dark in which you have lived, in the dark in which you have hidden and pretended and covered up, it shall be heard in the light, he says. And there shall come a time that what you whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed upon the housetops. In those days when people went to announce, in those days the newspapers were on the housetops, if you will. They spread word and news about town by going up on a housetop and yelling out to the neighborhood something that has happened in town. It was the highest means of broadcasting news. So what was whispered back in the corner of somebody's home ended up being shouted out on the housetop. And Jesus says, fear the one who hears what is whispered in the corners of the rooms of your life. Someday, it's going to be shouted. It's going to be broadcast in the highest means possible. Your sin. Fear him. Fear him because he knows you in and out. Fear him because he has known your thoughts and deceptions. Fear him because he is the moral governor of the universe and has no choice but to deal with sin. You can't negotiate your way for God to stop being the governor of the universe. You can't persuade him to stop being the ruler by which he must judge the thoughts and intents of the hearts of men. He has no choice but to administer his law according to the law's demands. Fear the God that will not back away from righteousness and justice. Fear the God who, if he is to remain God, cannot back away from justice and righteousness. You need not fear that God will ever be anything less than love. But love is always just. So fear the love of God that must be just when He has no alternative. Apostle Paul, Apostle Peter, numerous apostles were martyred for their faith in Christ rather than deny Him. But there was no reason to deny their killers or to fear their killers, for they can only kill the body, as Jesus said. But fear, Jesus tells us, him who after he is killed has authority to cast into hell, and that is only one being. That is God. The devil will cast nobody into hell. He has not the authority. For being cast into hell is a work of justice. And only the one charged with administering justice for the entire human race has the authority to administer that justice. And being cast into hell is the administration of justice against those who have transgressed the law of God. Fear Him. It is not personal with God. You do not have to fear that He has personal animosity or personal malice towards the sinner or towards you. You need not fear that God is so offended with you that He is taking it personal and that He's just waiting for the day to wreak vengeance against you and satisfy Himself that He's finally got you and instead of you getting Him, He's gotten you. You need not fear that this God is someone who holds a grudge against you personally and is just waiting for the opportunity to take your life so that He can just pour out His wrath upon you and satisfy His feelings. Satisfy this God who in righteousness can do nothing else but punish sin. Unless it has been forgiven. Fear Him who has the authority to cast it into hell. Listen, friends, this is the words of Jesus Christ. Anyone who believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God must take His word as it is. This is the instruction of the one whom the world has called the great teacher, a good teacher. This is the one whom the world at least acknowledges that His teachings are according to the truth, and that He taught good things, and He was a decent man. And He tells us to fear. But fear a particular object. And not fear those who might kill our bodies. Fear the one who has the authority to cast our soul into hell. Fear Him, Jesus said. Fearing God is not something that the people of the Old Testament were to do, but were relieved of because now Christ has come. Christ did not teach us in any way, shape, or form. You used to fear God. You poor, ignorant souls knew nothing about the love of God, so you used to fear Him. But I have come to let you know that God is not to be feared. He is only a God of love, and you have nothing to fear from God. No, that is not the teaching of Jesus. The teaching of Jesus is that the God that they feared in the Old Testament, they had good reasons to, and it was proper to fear Him, and it was the beginning of wisdom to fear Him. And you should still fear Him, because the conditions under which they feared Him are still in existence. God is in His heaven, He rules over the universe with the law of God, and the government of God, and He still is ruling and reigning, and He will not let sin go unpunished. Fear Him, for He has the authority to cast into hell. There's no fear of God before their eyes. Those who are living in sin and under sin, no fear of God before their eyes. What induced the fear of God in Israel and Mount? God did such things as to cause them to believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that He is real and He is there. He overcame all the natural tendencies to doubt in the existence of God. And God not only produced thunder and lightning and dark clouds, and then a loud sound of a trumpet. Who brought trumpets out of Egypt? Nobody. But that's not enough. He yelled at them from the top of the mountain. His commands, His holiness. Beyond doubt, God was there. It produced within them a trembling. And they were afraid of what He might do. Moses said, don't be afraid. But what He has done, He has done it so that you might fear Him. Don't be afraid of a storm. Don't be afraid that your body might cease to be able to live in His presence. But do fear Him who has authority to cast into hell. Do have a proper regard for His being, the reality of His existence. You will live in that reality. Live with that consciousness. Live in relationship to the reality of God. You cannot fear God and continue to live in sin. Moses said, He has done what He has done. He has demonstrated His presence with such irrefutable evidences. He has done it so that you will fear Him and not sin. Do you fear God? Growing up, how did your parents raise you? Did they raise you with casual rules, sporadic enforcement, to the point where you didn't fear your parents? That you really had no due regard for their authority or their exercise of their responsibilities? That you really believe that you probably could get away with pretty much anything by lying, doing it in a corner, making excuses? You grow up without a fear, a proper fear for your parents and their authority as appointed by God, and so disregarded their authority and disregarded their requirements of you that you lived as if they weren't really there. Is the fear of God something that is on the pathway to spiritual life with God? Is the fear of God an interim place that is to arrest your attention? Is the fear of God something that is good for a while until you finally come to love God and you don't need to fear Him anymore? It's a prophecy in the Old Testament about Jesus, Son of God, who would come. Then a shoot will spring from the stems of Jesse, and a branch from his roots will bear fruit. And the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and strength, the Spirit of knowledge, and the fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. The Son of God would have upon him the Spirit of the Lord rest upon him. And one of the things that it would produce is that he would delight in the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord, the fear of God, is an idea that needs to be grasped by us. Our fear of flying, and our fear of dying, and our fear of man so cloud our thoughts, and we are so intent on getting away from fear and trying to push it away and living with it, that we let it cloud our thinking of what it means to fear God. But it was one of the very heart attributes and attitudes of Jesus Himself. Delighted in the fear of the Lord. Let's see if we can get a little help here this morning. Fear. when it is pointed towards, it has to do with God. It's called reverence. To revere something. To have reverence for it. A feeling of profound respect, often mingled with awe and affection, veneration. An act of respect. To revere is to regard with veneration and reverence, to venerate. Well, I think there's more help when we look up the word venerate. What is venerate? What does revere mean to you? You say a high person was highly revered. Talk about people who revere people almost as if they worship them. And that's a good term. To venerate. To look upon or regard with respect and deference. To adore, honor, respect, revere. In the highest sense, to revere or reverence is to hold in mingled love and honor with something of sacred fear. To revere is a holy spiritual act. To reverence is often, but not necessarily, to give outward expression to the reverential feeling. We revere or reverence the divine majesty. Revere is a stronger word than reverence or venerate. To venerate is to hold in exalted honor without fear, and is applied to objects less removed from ourselves than those we revere, being said especially of aged persons, etc. We venerate an aged friend or some great cause. We do not venerate God, but we revere or reverence Him. The book of Acts, chapter 5, something very interesting happens. The believers in Jesus Christ were receiving the promise of the Spirit, now that He has ascended into heaven, gathered together increasingly in larger numbers, and are called the church. In chapter 5, there was a certain person attaching himself and numbering himself with the church. A certain man named Ananias, with his wife Sapphira, sold a piece of property and kept back some of the price for himself. With his wife's full knowledge and bringing a portion of it, he laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit? Did he pack some of the price of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not under your control? Why is it that you have conceived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. And as Ananias heard these words, Ananias fell down and breathed his last, and great fear came upon all who heard of it. Another demonstration by God of His reality and His character. Not thunder and lightning and trumpet sound, but the striking of a liar and a hypocrite dead before witnesses. Great fear came upon all who heard of it. And that same thing happened to his wife. In verse 11, after his wife also fell dead, it says, and great fear came upon the whole church and upon all who heard of these things. Great fear came upon the whole church. It is not out of place for great fear of God to come upon the whole church. God is making known in front of the church on this particular occasion what He thinks of sin and lying and hypocrisy. God has taken this occasion to demonstrate the reality of Himself and that He is a governor over our lives And he has taken this occasion in front of the apostles at the beginning of the church to demonstrate in unmistakable terms that he has the authority to cast into hell. And he will do so to every sinner. That things that were whispered in the corner in Ananias and Sapphira's home will be shouted upon the housetops as they live out their hypocrisy. And Jesus tells us we are to fear the one who has the authority to cast into hell, because he will not let that which is whispered in the corner be uncovered, be covered and covered forever. He will cause it to be known. When he causes the sin of men to be known and shattered upon the housetop at the last judgment, with his authority to cast into hell, all beings will agree that person should be cast into hell. And Jesus tells us to fear that one who has that authority. Don't fear men who can only kill your body. There are some believing spouses who live with people who are prone and have the ability to flare up in such anger that at times they have a reason to fear their physical safety. I say to you, Jesus says, don't fear that person. They can only destroy your body. Fear God. He has the authority to cast both body and soul into hell. Would you please see that, please? Guy, would you please quiet down? People. It's a terrible thing to fall into the hands of an angry God, the scripture says. There is a right fear of God. It captivates the soul. Sobers the mind, draws it out of fears of things that are so insignificant, and raises it up until it begins to live as if and because. One reason there is no fear of God before their eyes is because they let distractions turn their attention away from God and His reality. They are willing to let treasures and riches, enjoyments and pleasures, one more game on TV, one more magazine at 7-Eleven, one more time with the guys, one more time doing this and one more time doing that, till the day is filled with distractions and there's no fear before their eyes. No fear of God before their eyes. They're full of fear that they won't have a job tomorrow. They're full of fear that they won't have money enough for the rest of this month. They're full of fear of what people think about them. But there's no fear of God before their eyes. I'll close with one text. Philippians. Philippians chapter 2. Verse 12. So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for His good pleasure. So many people like to quote that verse. Verse 13, and exalted as a verse that teaches that the work of God in us is what is going to produce salvation. And it is. Paul tells us to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, because it is God who is working in us. God begins a work of salvation in your mind and in your heart.
Do not with fear and trembling respect the work of God that you seek him to do in your heart. You neglect so great salvation. You turn off your mind from contemplating and thinking seriously upon the things of God that he is seeking to work in you and cause you to will and do. You're not willing to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. You will not have it. A person who does not fear God is a person who lives as though God does not exist. There is no hell. There is no judgment. There is no ruler of the universe. Shows in their life. They are flippant, full of levity and jesting. They think that sensuality is the core of existence, and gratifying it is the height of achievement. And they live as though God does not exist. And there is the chief demonstration that there is no fear of God before their eyes. Live as though God does not exist, that he does not take into account all of your heart's intents and all the acting out of your heart. You act as though he does not see in the corner where you whisper. You act as though he will not shout it upon the housetop. To see a person sin against God is but to ask the question, do you not fear God? No fear of God in your heart. To be an employee in a business, a large factory, whatever it may be. And the boss, who really has a relationship with everyone, not so big that the boss is not known, has a relationship with everyone. And he has made it perfectly clear he will not tolerate stealing from the supplies in the office. And one person is caught stealing, and he is brought before everyone, and he says, I told you, no one will be tolerated stealing from the office. This person is fired as of right now. The person leaves in chains. And the next week, you're with a fellow worker, and you're in the office, and you see him start to stuff things in his pocket. It would be proper to say, have you no fear? Our boss. Have you no due regard and belief in what he says? Acting as though his word is meaningless and he does not intend to carry out his word.